Oh, we are
Oh.
two different people for sure. I could not do that. I could never do that. I am, again, I think I can't. If I don't have something in my hands, I will be the most uncomfortable person to watch ever.
You're like,
I don't get how frontmen do it, where they just got like the mic and they're just going all out. I'm also just like the most uncomfortable dancer ever.
really? I feel like you'd be good at it.
No. Oh no. Oh no. It's as bad as my jokes, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Plus, I think it'd be hard because then everyone can hear you breathing. So, like, when you're out of breath, there's
Yes,
no escape.
that's true. That's true. I never thought about that. Every mic I've ever used is always attached to a mic stand or in my hands, which is, I'll take the mic stand, occupy my hands with a guitar or literally anything else.
Just something to hang on to. Keep you sane. That's why I started wearing rings again, so I can just play with things and not just
Yeah.
the pen clicking. Boy.
Oh yeah, the pen clicking. I do that too for sure.
I'm the fucking like, don't give me a clicky pen. It's not. Somebody bought a box of clicky Sharpies, and I'm like, fuck yes, but I'm also like, you will rue this day.
Well, welcome to Fueled by Lore. We're so good at
Yay.
this. Oh my
That's a
gosh.
Today we have the lovely, the fabulous Angela hanging out with us. Hello, Angela.
Hello, it's good to be here with you guys.
Yes.
No need for professionalism. We don't know what we're doing. This is
Yeah.
just
The moment I finished that, I'm like, okay, well now what? That was
now what, yeah. But I mean, it's pretty exciting to have like our first dancer on here, which is pretty exciting. I think it's like kind of cool to like talk to people about different mediums, and it's interesting. So,
Yeah.
what I guess, oh man, are we just diving right in right now?
Tell us
Let's
about dance,
go.
Did I just
Angela.
go
Tell
into
us all
interview mode?
about
It's not even an interview. Oh gosh, I can't interview people.
it.
Hang in there, Patty. It'll be
Yeah.
okay.
Do you remember like what kind of initially drew you to dance?
Yeah, tell us about little Angela.
Yeah, let's get that lore, as the kids are calling it.
Little Angela was, she had a lot going on. I had like a lazy eye and I had to wear a patch at one point
My
and
God.
had like the glasses with bifocals. But so there's a lot going on with little Angela, but I don't know. I honestly don't remember my first experiences with dance. My parents signed me up at a local studio here in town, Dance Dimensions, when I was 3, and I just loved it. And you know, a lot of kids at that age love moving and love, music. And so it from the beginning, I loved it, and then it just stuck. And as I got older, I was in gymnastics for a while, and then it came to the point where it's like, okay, you have to choose one or the other, just timing wise, and it's kind of a no-brainer for me to choose dance. And though, like, growing up, I was always interested in academic subjects as well, and I was really like excited about learning. I always knew that I wanted to be a dancer, and that was first, like that was my goal. So, I don't know, it kind of, thanks to my parents, I just got into it and fell in love with it. Yeah.
Well, I like that. I feel like sometimes like talking about like, oh, why do you do like this thing that you like doing? And I think that a lot of us can kind of have a little bit of like gratitude to kind of nod to our parents and just be like, I was lucky enough that they said you've got to try something, and you're like, ah, I'll try this, and then it happens, and then you end up, in your case, making a career out of it. Which, how was that? Like, I've seen all of your photos and everything. We've talked, you and I have talked about it too, but like, what, how did it feel to go from like, you know, starting off and like trying dance from like age three, and then all of a sudden you, you know, maybe blink, and then all of a sudden you're in a dance company performing and getting paid to dance?
Yeah, I feel like the process is, it's kind of, it comes in pieces. Like, you know, growing up dancing, like I got to that point where I was competitive and going to conventions and kind of being introduced to the professional world, like in between summers, summers in between high school, I would go out to LA and do like summer scholarship programs and kind of see what that world is like, get my feet wet a little bit, sort of get to know the area, the studios. And, you know, I did go to college right after high school, and I studied dance and communications. And so for a while there, I was going to school and then also slightly in the professional world, doing auditions and things like that. And so it was kind of nice to have that transition, especially being far from home, just like a transition to kind of get me into the dance world slowly. I honestly feel like it would have been, especially just the LA scene, the LA dance scene, it would have been too much for me all at once if it had come first. Just because it's such a fast-paced, high-intensity environment, specifically with the commercial dance scene, it's just a lot of audition after audition and rejection after rejection. And so I think it really takes a tough skin with, you know, with acting as well, or anything that's kind of that nature in the entertainment industry. It takes a tough skin to keep going. And thankfully I had that time to kind of build that while I was in school. And then I kind of had more idea of what I was doing when I got out of school. And then it's like, I don't know, it happens gradually and wonderfully. You make a connection, and then you make more connections, and then you realize that the dance world is so small. And, you know, once you do one job, if you do a good job there, then you do, you know, they'll invite you back for another one. And so a lot of it is networking, but I would say, you know, over the course of my time in that professional dance industry in LA in particular, while there are a handful of great experiences and opportunities, I feel like there's a lot of behind the scenes work that, you know, goes into that. And I think when you look back, like now, like looking back, it's like, oh wow, like I did all these cool things, and you know, that was a great experience, this was a great experience. But then you realize how much time it was over the course of, and you recognize that there was a lot of hard work, a lot of like, you know, tight budgets, and but on the flip side, so it's like there's that hard work aspect, but then there's like those feelings when you're on stage and you're like, wow, this is what I've always wanted to do. I am here, like this is happening. And you know, it's like, I don't know, when you have a dream or something that's worth pursuing to you, even if on the outside people don't see it as valid or people don't see it as, you know, important, when you have that mindset of going for it, like nothing's gonna stop you. And so there are certain moments for sure while I was on stage or doing certain projects where I was just like, this is what I've always dreamed of. And it is exciting, you know, it's exciting to like have been able to make a living doing it, and you know, it not feel like work. So
what was your favorite little project from that time? Because you were talking about some really cool ones and stuff, and obviously like fucking yeah, like behind the scenes stuff is a lot, but like where have you been, Angela? Tell me these things that you have.
Yeah, well, a couple of my favorite ones, definitely my time in Japan, performing for Tokyo Disney. I was, well, you guys know, but yeah, I was the Little Mermaid. And that time was just so cool because not only was I in a new country and a new culture, that was the most exciting part, is like learning mm-hmm. all about Japanese culture and being a part of it. But I was performing in a new capacity. It was as an aerialist. So mm-hmm. I was incorporating my dance and my dance training, but also performing for the first time really as an aerialist in a harness. And that was just overall probably my favorite experience because of it being in Japan and me being able to connect with so many of the Japanese people in the community, but also people from all over the world, as there were dancers from, you know, Australia and Canada and South Africa and England, and it was really cool. So that stands out as a highlight. Definitely, I've done a couple of TV things, and I would say my biggest moment on TV was it was an episode of The Fosters back in 2014. but it was, I don't know, I was 24 at the time, and I played a 16-year-old, and I just kind of had a featured part, and that was really, really exciting and special because, I don't know, it was just like I'd always wanted to have something like that happen, but I didn't know if it actually would, mm-hmm. and I was so nervous beforehand. I was like doing push-ups, pacing, I did not know what to do. But fun facts, just quickly about that one, mm-hmm. when we actually did the filming of it, we had headphones in and they didn't play the music out loud, so we were just like going for it, dancing in this room, and it was like silent in the room as they were filming. So that was an interesting experience. And then also the assistant choreographer during the filming was trying to like demonstrate something, and she didn't realize that the director was behind her, and she punched her in the face. It was bad. So like those kind of things, like those memories are, I mean, fun and wild. A couple more highlights. Another thing that stood out or that stands out is I did an industrial in Utah for doTERRA Oils, and it was a big just convention center, and we did it. It was Greatest Showman themed, and we did a mix of This Is Me with You Will Be Found from Dear Evan Hansen. Mm-hmm. And it was epic because there were two singers, we were dancing, there was a choir that came on at the end, and it's just this huge, huge like arena. And moments like that, you can just like feel the energy. And those kind of are the standouts. I also really enjoyed, you know, touring with companies that I was in and being able to perform in various locations, but those are some of the highlights, I'd say. Yeah.
I love that. And like just imagining like the scheme and size of some of those productions that you were in, it's just like the taking a second to just realize everything that went into it on the back end, like you were talking about earlier, is just kind of astounding, honestly. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, you have a TV production, and then you have, like you said, like an arena, everything that goes into, you know, lighting and sound and just presentation, and then on top of that, just the human management for getting people in. Yeah. Like every step of the way, there's always something that you maybe just, whenever you go to a show, you don't think about or consider unless you get to be a part of the arts, which is, mm-hmm. you know, always cool. And also very interesting. I find sometimes I sit here and analyze the mix of songs as I'm listening to them on Spotify and be like, oh, I didn't notice that tambourine in the left pan. I was like, cool. But, and I think that also kind of ties into one thing that we've talked about a lot, I swear, pretty much every episode, is kind of like the idea of like an artist graveyard almost, mm-hmm. where, so like Beth has like a whole bunch of sketches or something, and I have like my voice memo folder, which is just a whole bunch of like half written songs or whatever. Mm-hmm. What do you think would be the dancer's equivalent of like, you know, like my collection of half-written songs, half-recorded songs, or like Beth's
fucking
like
stack of sketchbooks over there. I'm going through right now.
Yeah, I would say the equivalent would be, you know, it's interesting because I think this is, with dance, it's a little different because it's such a fleeting art form. Mm-hmm. And I mean, going back to even when I was learning in college, we took, there's something called Laban notation, and it's from before, you know, we had video cameras. It's basically a way to like codify dance and pass it along. And so Laban created these kind of images and almost like a language and a code to kind of be able to write a dance out and pass it along. And so that was really interesting. I did not like it because I felt like there's so much you can do with dance, and it's not just like your arm is here, like it could be here, or sorry, I guess you can't really see this, but your arm, you know, there are so many ways you can move your arm, and just one notation does not give enough detail, I feel like. But with dance, I would say in the modern day, you know, people will record their ideas, just like set up their iPhone and record little bits of choreography that they have that they, you know, are developing. And I would say a lot of times those never get shared or never get fully developed into full productions or pieces. So I would bet you that on a lot of dancers' phones, there are several videos of just started work, but never brought to stage or never brought to film or anything like that.
Are you
I like that
working on
just.
anything? I'm just curious.
Me personally, it's interesting because performance and choreography are so different. I feel like, you know, being a part of something and making someone's vision come to life versus creating your own work is a different thing. But I am working, I teach dance at a studio, and so I'm working on their recital pieces for them. I have a couple different age groups. But then on a personal note, I'm in a couple performance companies, and we're working on some films and a performance that's coming up in May. And so some of that I'll have collaborative choreographic duties and responsibilities. But for a piece outside of those things, I don't have anything brewing at the moment.
Well, I guess that's kind of hard to when you're so fucking busy, Angela. Yeah, rake it in.
There's a lot. I mean, it is hard, I would say, like, I don't know, it's hard to go from being an artist and like having dance as a career to like transitioning into a different career with like a full-time job, because I find you have to fight to keep, you know, I have to fight to keep dance a part of my life now. But I do it because it's so worth it.
Yeah, if it's something you care about, you'll find a way. Just like you were talking about earlier, it's like nothing's gonna stop you if it matters enough.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Is there like a different approach for, or kind of like completely different experience creatively when it comes to like performing versus choreography? Because like you were saying, like when you're performing, you're essentially like making someone else's vision come true. Do you get any like creative input when you're doing those performances? Like perhaps kind of like what you were talking about, how, you know, dance can't just be, ultimately it can, but also can't be whittled down to, like you said, like a, I don't know, like a form or just like a frame, right? Because you can always adjust that frame in a whole bunch of different ways. Like you said, you could hold your hand upside down from what it's shown on like the photo or something like that. So is there like a creative edge or kind of identity that you get to bring to your performances? Or is the creative aspect kind of left predominantly to the choreographer?
That's a really good question. I would say it definitely depends on the project. I know certain choreographers just want it, this is how it is, it needs to be specific. For example, like the Rockettes in, you know, New York City, they have no artistic freedom as performers because that whole vision and what makes it the Rockettes is the precision and the exactness of everyone matching and everyone being the same. Whereas other projects, like, you know, projects I was involved in college or projects that are more collaborative, choreographers will oftentimes invite their dancers to be a part of the creative process and use even certain exercises to bring about inspiration. They might ask for each dancer to come up with a phrase and then show each other their phrases, and then the choreographer will pick bits and pieces of what they like and meld it with their own vision. But I would say with every performance, the performer does have the ability to be creative with how they execute the movements and what they've been given. That's what I enjoy, is like making it come to life and understanding what it is that the choreographer is trying to convey, and then how can I bring myself to it? How can I connect to that, bring myself to it, and then portray it in a way that will be relatable to the audience? So I would say as a performer, you always have the ability to, you know, to express and be creative within the movements even. And then from the choreographic standpoint, I think it's so interesting because I have friends who are, both dancers and choreographers, just like I am. And there are some that just love choreographing more than anything, you know, more than performing. But then there seems to be this like division, like, oh, I love choreographing, and then, you know, oh, I'm more of a performer. Like, I will choreograph, mm-hmm. but like, I'm more of a performer. And so I feel like for each group, one or the other is like more of a vulnerable task. And I feel like for myself, especially, choreography at first is very, you know, nerve-wracking and scary, because it's like, mm-hmm. it's performing is obviously a part of you, but choreography and that creation takes, I feel like takes more of you, because it's yours and it's, you know, very vulnerable, and it can be, you just worry about being judged, or is it good enough, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of general struggles. But so I would just say that the choreographic process, I think, can sometimes be more taxing, because you have all of those, you know, it's like art and fear, right? And you have those fears, but the art is worth pushing through and creating what you're going to create.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah, like,
thanks.
It's just, art's so cool, because it's just this, you know, dare I say, wholesome, like super authentic way to just, the human way to be vulnerable, mm-hmm. like the OG vulnerability.
Yes.
And it's, yeah, I think it's so cool to just hear everyone's stories, but I'm also like interested. I've had people say like, oh, you get up on stage and perform, like, oh, you're so brave. And I'm like, am I? Or am I just kind of like, hey, everybody, pay attention to me. And I think actually, like, going through that in my head again, remind me, I don't know if you're familiar with Bo Burnham, the comedian.
Oh,
he has a wonderful, wonderful song called Art is Dead. I definitely recommend checking it out. But it was just an interesting take, because I feel like in that song, he encapsulates kind of like my fear of like, oh, you know, being performing in some aspect with like music and stuff, like that I always fear that I'm maybe like being like show offy or like, hey, pay attention to me. Mm-hmm. Or the line in there is basically just like, oh, I'm just a little attention seeker. It's the drug I'm addicted to is attention. Uh-huh. And I tricked you guys into paying me to indulge in my addiction. And I was just like, it cuts a little too deep, Bo. It hurts. But do you kind of run into similar kind of doubts or feelings like that? Or is performance just kind of like, you know, is it actually something like genuinely brave, like you think?
You know, that sounds hilarious, by the way, but that's, I think that's a good question. And I feel like it's kind of honestly a person by person, case by case basis. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
You know, 'cause it's like doing this since I've been so young, it's so natural that mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like I'm like, oh, look at me, because it's just what I've always been doing. And it also at the same time doesn't feel like vulnerable. Well, sometimes it feels vulnerable, but it's not like, oh, wow, like I'm doing this. It's so hard to do this because I'm used to it and it's what I really enjoy. But I think it just depends on, you know, on the person. Like, for example, I kind of have assumed that performers in general, like any kind of, you know, singer, entertainer, dancer, comedian, whatever, are good at like public speaking because they do some sort of other performance. But in speaking with a lot of my friends, they're like, no, I hate public speaking. Like, I will not get up in front of people and talk. And I'm like, but you just performed in front of thousands of people, like moving your body, like, you know? And so there's like that differentiation that I think is, I always thought like was linked that like, oh, if you're comfortable on stage doing one thing that you're good at, you'll likely be comfortable on stage doing other things. But mm-hmm. I mean, that's not, I don't know, that doesn't seem to be the case. So I think it just depends on the person. But for me, I feel like, you know, I don't feel that like vulnerability in a way of like, oh, you should be commended for getting up there and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope it's not like, oh, look at me. Even though sometimes it is, I don't know, it can feel that way.
Yeah. That's a legit fear, but that cracks me up that you guys are like, oh no, I don't want to be an attention whore. But you like, it's literally your job to be an attention whore.
Well, and that another point too is I feel like it depends, because like I feel like if dancers are with singers, they're there to support. They're not the main, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it depends on what it is.
That's true.
That's fair. Yeah, it definitely feels a little more comfortable at times. And maybe that's just like a bit of like the vulnerability is, you know, just putting yourself out there at the, hey, look at me. Pay attention to all the emotions I'm throwing out.
Yeah.
But like, I think also like when you break it down, like whether your art form, whether it's like music, dance, or like drawing and stuff, is it's to an extent like a form of like therapy, and it's always a form of like expression.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also like a way to connect with other people.
Yes.
So like, I know for me, like, I know I've talked about it like a million times at this point, but like songwriting and stuff, sometimes my lyrics just come out as like straight gibberish, but it's therapeutic because it's, you know, something, it basically like makes my, whatever I'm going through or like feeling like concrete and like out in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes that's all it takes to, you know, stand up in front of a microphone and shout gibberish into it. And then people, you know, are able to unwind their own emotions and stuff and untangle themselves emotionally too. And same thing with dance, like you can get, you know, just the way you move, it just kind of, it's electrifying and stuff, and it adds this energy to the room or the arena, and it's therapeutic in its connection with other people where they get to escape from life and mm-hmm. untangle themselves. So
yeah, I think that, I mean, that's so well said. And I mean, with dance too, I mean, with using art as an outlet is like such a healthy thing. And I feel like so much of the time, you know, dancers and artists will engage in their art form just for themselves, like when no mm-hmm. one's watching, you know. And it's like, you know, you go into your room and you're just singing, or like, you know, Beth, you're doing something like drawing, drawing without intending, you know, for it to go anywhere, for it to be on display anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there are so many times when I don't feel like myself, and then I'll like dance to mm-hmm. release whatever's there, and then I feel better again. But it doesn't require an audience. It doesn't require that anyone see it. So it's like, that's like, there's validity in that. And I think sometimes in those places are where we grow most as artists, is when no one's watching. Mm-hmm. So that we can bring that truth to the times when we're in front of audiences. And I forget who said it, but one of my favorite quotes about like dance is, you know, the audience may never remember what you do, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. And it's like, that's what it's all about, is like, it doesn't really matter how you get them to that point of connection, but you do. And then, you know, mm-hmm. that connection is important, is the most important.
Yeah. I like how you described it earlier, where dance is such a fleeting art. Do you think that, you know, adding multimedia, like there's certain ways to that multimedia can like add to performance and add to art. So mm-hmm. like, for instance, you go from, you have the natural progression of, you had like books, and then all of a sudden you've got TV shows and movies and stuff and plays, and they're just like all these different ways to tell stories. And so with dance, I'm interested, do you think that with modernization of everything, advancement of technology and everything, do you think that the constant like videotaping and stuff of dance and like basically like projection that way, does that add to the art of dance, and also does it take away certain elements as well? Because mm-hmm. I think that like my approach would be like, now you can have like videos of people dancing and performances and stuff, which is incredible, because then you can encapsulate like, hey, this, like, instead of just being like, I remember seeing, like, for me, I could just be like, I remember seeing Yo-Yo Ma in 2012, and he's never performed that way ever again, or like Andre Rieu or something like that. And I'd mm-hmm. imagine you could do the same thing for like dances and stuff, but then you can, you know, videotape and record those performances. Do you think that adds to or takes away certain aspects of the performance? Because I think sometimes it can, you know, take away a little bit of novelty, but it's also preserved.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's like multifaceted, because in my experience, I would say with dance in particular, like, there's nothing like a live performance with mm-hmm. with dance. Like, there's nothing like, both as an audience member and as a performer on stage, it's like that feeling and that energy in the room is electric, and it just is not conveyed to the same degree mm-hmm. In film. Like, just talking strictly about like videotaping a live performance, the energy that's felt and like the intensity just is some of it is lost in filming it. However, if you are doing like a specific video project where, you know, you can use multiple cameras and different angles and different shots, mm-hmm. and I think that can really enhance and has enhanced dance and brought it to new levels, where the experience of the person watching is definitely enhanced by the use of just filming, because you can, you know, the way you edit it, the way you cut it, the way, you know, you can, I mean, it's amazing, and it's an art mm-hmm. form in itself, like just, you know, cinematography and all of that. So I would say definitely it goes both ways. Personally, as a performer, my experience doing live performance is like not for camera, like work not for camera made for an audience mm-hmm. in a traditional sense is way more fulfilling as a performer, because it's like you don't get another take. You yeah. have to make it work, right? Like mm-hmm. if a mistake happens, that's part of it, and you have to make it work. And it's like the adrenaline and the excitement is at an all-time high. Whereas, you know, with film projects and stuff, a TV episode or music videos were a big thing. When I got out to LA, I was like, oh, I'm so excited, I'm gonna do music videos. And by the end of that 8 or 12 hour shoot, I did not want to do music videos anymore because it's just like the same thing over and over again. And it feels contrived in some ways, and just not as exciting or thrilling, because you get to do it until it's perfect, and mm-hmm. that's not really how art, how I enjoy really going about art. But I do agree that, you know, there are a lot of mediums that enhance dance, and especially in this modern age, like film is one of them, and it can work really well. But I think in terms of in the moment capturing the full emotional intent is definitely just best captured by being live and being there with the performers.
Yeah, I think it's also cool that no matter what kind of art form you partake in, especially like if it's like a performance, I think that there's always going to be like this kind of like level of awe and stuff, especially in like kind of before you get up to like the super professional level, because I feel like that's when a lot of emotions are tied in a little bit more, because mm-hmm. I think that as you get to the quote unquote professional aspects of thing is that, you know, that's when people start accusing artists of selling out, because, and it's like, oh, you're not just doing it for the emotions or just for the fans, you're doing it for your paycheck, mm-hmm. which is a fair criticism. But I also think that it's not entirely fair of the, you know, on the artist as well. So I think that one thing that's really cool is, you know, go to your local production of, you know, Peter Pan or something at a really small studio, or go to like that dance studio's recital that you've, if you've never been to a dance show before or something, or go to that, you know, dingy DIY concert venue and watch a band. You never know where those people are going to go. And that's when I think that you get some of those most raw and like just incredible, like basically like potentially historic moments, because, mm-hmm. you know, that's when you see people lay it all out on the line, because that's where the passions are born and that's where the stories start. So
yeah,
I think that's one thing that's, I think is always going to remain with any kind of art, is those early stages are always going to remain raw and essentially like unfilmed. Mm-hmm. And so there's only going to be one time that you can go see, you know, state champs at Seventh Circle in Denver in like a little converted mechanics garage, just so we can bring up Seventh Circle in literally every single episode. I love that place. I love you, Aaron. But like, it's, you know, it's those, you know, like you said, it's, I'm going to do this and no one's going to stop me. And I think it comes out the truest at those early stages, you know, mm-hmm. because you're not, and we've talked about this too with like, I'm not sure if there's like an equivalent for dance theory. I'd imagine there is dance theory, dance technique. Whereas like with music theory and stuff, it's like, oh, you can't really play these notes in this order because it doesn't really work. It doesn't make sense. Sounds weird. And then same thing with like Beth's mentioned with like drawing techniques and painting techniques. So it's just kind of, you have like an extra added element of freedom. Mm-hmm. Have you ever felt like as you got into like the professional aspect that you got to the fringes of quote unquote selling out, or, you know, being limited by the rules and the techniques or anything? Or did you feel like they laid a foundation for you to be more free with your expression?
Mm. This is a really good question. I feel like, well, I love that you bring up the idea of like the paycheck and the artist, right? Because it's mm-hmm. like, it's hard to be an artist and make a living. And I feel like in so many cases, you do have to do what you have to do in order to keep going and to make the paycheck. And I feel like with dance in my career and in my experience in the entertainment industry, it's like, You have kind of both choices. Like, you have what you do that gets you the paycheck that might not be your favorite, that might not be, you know, it might not be what you want to do. It's not where your heart is. But then there are always opportunities at the same time to do what you're passionate about. You can start your own project. You can get involved with a choreographer that's not paying their dancers at the moment, but you're really interested in their work. And then you can, you know, work at this theme park as a dancer on the side if that isn't what you love, but and get paid for it. But if theme park work is what you love, then like that's right up your alley. So I feel like there are so many there are definitely choices, and I feel like at times I feel like there were certain jobs that I would do where I was like, okay, this isn't really, you know, what I want to do, but the pay is good and it's still performing and I would do it. Right. But then there would be jobs that I would do that were for free. And it's like, I don't care that I'm not getting paid. Like I need to be a part of this because I'm so passionate about it. I have to be a part of this. And I feel like, so in the dance realm, I feel like there is a lot of choice with those types of things. And, I think sometimes for certain like long-term contracts, if, you know, if there was a dancer who was very equipped and prevalent in like a certain style, and they were teaching or something, and then they just like went over here and did a contract that was completely outside of what they would know and love, like, then I think people be like, oh, did it just for the money, sold out. Mm-hmm. Like, but I feel like there is, it's just such a hard tension, because it's like, you know, we want to do what we love, and if we can do something that we get paid well for, that's still in the realm of our art, but it's not exactly where our heart is, like, I think it's a great way to facilitate still doing it and making money while you're pursuing, you know, things that might not, you know, be paying as much. Mm-hmm. And I think too, just with dance, just as an aside, like, there's a kind of a big separation between like commercial work and concert work. Mm-hmm. And so there's always like that too, of like, oh, well, you're like, you know, doing this commercial TV, just entertainment stuff. And then it's like, well, you're doing this like weird, like artsy, you know, stage stuff. So it's like, there's just kind of this divide, but it's like, mm-hmm. I really wish that there wasn't. And it's just like, you know, people enjoy different things. It's okay to be doing something and getting paid well for it. Even if it's not like what you're going after, it's okay to do something that you really are passionate about, even though you're not being paid for it, you know? So I think there's kind of a lot of options in the dance realm, because there are always things that you can do, I don't know, to just facilitate as you're kind of making your path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the like hard truths that you kind of swallow as part of growing up is that, you know, work is work. And unfortunately, I don't think that there's a perfect world where you're going to get that dream job that's the dream 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, you're always going to make a compromise. And so what it is you have to find that balance where you're making everything work and you're basically affording to do what you want to do in your craft without compromising your values.
Yes.
Which I think is the, yes. You know, some days it feels like it's impossible to find that balance, but
mm-hmm.
You know, you're living proof that it's possible. So,
well, thanks.
Here we are.
Yeah. I feel like too, that's a really good thing you bring up about compromising your values, because especially in the entertainment industry, like that can come up very easily with just like, what kind of message do you want to be sending, and what kind of things do you want to be involved in? And it, the lines can easily blur mm-hmm. when you're, you know, trying to, quote unquote, like make it.
Yeah. Ooh, I have one question that I've been wanting to ask, but it didn't really, it felt like I was just like shove it in the conversation that we're having. But so outside of like, usually you have like, oh, I'm going to go do rehearsal, like, you know, at this time, I have class at this time and whatnot. Is there any other times outside of just like scheduled programming mm-hmm. that, you know, you just get the inspiration or just like urge to dance or like choreograph something? And is there something that's like kind of consistent that just kind of hits you and is like, it's dancing time?
Well, for me, dancing time never really stops. Like, I've always...
It's my secret. I never stop dancing. I'm dancing right now.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like, I'm always kind of dancing in the grocery store or like, you know, tapping my feet. It's like, I would say it never really stops. But there are certain times where I feel more inspired than others, mainly when it's connected to music. Like, mainly when I hear... Like, if I'm in the car and I hear a song that I haven't heard before and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can see this happening. Like, I need to get home and like work this out in my mind so that I can, you know, put out what's in my head. So for me, at least personally, my choreographic experience and creative process is very heavily tied to music. And music is, I would say, 99% of the time what drives me and what kind of initiates the process. So for me, like choreographing to a song that I really resonate with or am familiar with makes the choreographic process so much smoother and easier because it's a song I already have an emotional connection to and I already know what I want to say. And then it just kind of, it just flows. But not everyone's choreographic process is like that. In college, they definitely encouraged us to come up with the movement first and then try out different songs. And I did not like that approach. I mean, that works for, you know, for some people, but for me, it's like the music and the movement need to be tied together. So I would say definitely most of the time when I'm like, all right, I need to choreograph, it's because I've heard a piece of music that's inspiring, or I've thought of something, you know, sometimes it'll come at random and I'm like, oh, this series of movements, you know, but music is usually always the through line.
Nice. Way to tie in my favorite podcast. Shout out to NPR. Please sponsor us, even though you're a nonprofit and you can't do that.
One day, Patrick.
One day. I love that. Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's also just like a testament to how, you know, art and dance kind of just seep into and like every nook and cranny of our lives. And sometimes we don't realize that or appreciate it, which is, you know, really cool. And so it's nice to know that you either dance like 24/7 or have restless leg syndrome, just like me, which you might have just admitted, which is cool. It's nice to know not all of us are alone, so that's cool. But have you, have you had any ideas kind of like escape you? Like if you had like, oh, this movement would be so cool. Or you're like, oh, I want to do a choreography to this song or something. And you get home to like do it and you're like, shit, I don't know what I was, what was it?
Yes. Oh my gosh. It happens all the time. I was actually doing like a choreography workshop with some younger students recently, kind of outlining the process and just kind of getting them different tools of what they can use for their own choreography. And it will happen like in seconds. Like you'll be playing a section of the music and you do something and you'll be like, oh, okay, let me go back and like do it again. And as soon as you take it back, it's gone. And you're like, oh wait, you can kind of get it, but then it wasn't what you had. And so I feel like, man, it happens all the time. And sometimes too, I feel like when you have a song that you love as well, it can be inspiring and it can flow super easily. Or sometimes it can be daunting as a whole piece where you're like, I want to honor this song because it is so epic. And then you're like, I don't even know where to begin. So I find that just like definitely breaking it down into smaller chunks is really helpful. And you don't always have to start at the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
A non-linear approach is very helpful, I think, with choreography.
Also, have you like had like pieces like movements and stuff and you're like, oh, that doesn't fit in that piece, and you just like log it in the back of your brain and then you're choreographing I struggle with that word.
Okay.
Choreographing piece, and then you're just like, I know exactly where I can put that movement that didn't work in that other piece. Have you ever done that with like your backlog of like, oh, this wrist flick would be perfect here?
The wrist flick graveyard.
The wrist flick. I have done that kind of more rarely, but interestingly enough in tap pieces. So when I'm choreographing for tap, it's like so rhythm based that sometimes I'll have a rhythm that I'm working with and then I want to fit it in because I like it, but then it doesn't work with the music and I'm like, oh dang it, like I really like this. And then I'll take that tap rhythm, and if I can find another piece of music that works, I'll definitely use that. I feel like with tap and hip hop too, that's mainly where I do that.
How many kinds of let me try that again. What do you do, Angela? Like, what would you consider your genre of dance, or the genres you dabble in? Like, I'm here in tap, I'm here in hip hop, girl, what do you do?
Well, I do them all, and I love them all.
I love it.
I'll give you my main styles that I choreograph in and perform in most often, and then I'll give you what I do. But
yes,
mainly like contemporary and lyrical and jazz are my styles that I perform, teach, and choreograph for most frequently. Mm-hmm. Especially here in Colorado, the contemporary scene is really strong, so that's more of, you know, what I do. But then I love all the styles, and I've done, and you know, still do ballet, hip hop, musical theater. Love musical theater. Bollywood. Bollywood is one of my favorite styles. I've done a little bit of breakdancing, but modern. Modern isn't as much a favorite of mine, but those are the main ones, and it's so cool because there are so many elements from each style that kind of inform other elements, and but then some are so unique from each other. So it's really nice to have a foundation and a background in all of it, because eventually when you hear a piece of music, you can just, it just becomes movement, right? And then by the end of it, you realize, oh, okay, this is more this style, but it's just like your first instinct movement. And then it's like, oh yeah, this is this style. So.
I like describing it as the first instinct just being movement and then going from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like too, that's like a helpful thing when, if you're like not as comfortable with a certain style, like I'll tell my students, if it's like, they're like, oh, well, this is my first time doing jazz, I've only done hip hop, I'm like, just think of it as movement. Don't think of it, don't label it or title it as a certain thing, because then that thing in your mind is like, oh, I've never done this, I'm not good at it. But you've moved, it's just movement. Just take in the movement and then you'll be fine. So.
I like that. Even you can dance, listener. Yeah, you.
You can! And I'm sure you do.
Well, with that, we are kind of running close for time. And I'm also running close for time. But, Beth, do you have any last little questions to hit, or?
Oh, Patty Melt, just the one.
Just the one? Actually, we got that plus a request.
Okay.
Share your shit, Angela!
Where can we find you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh,
that was so loud. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the audacity. I just yelled into the mic. I'm so sorry for everyone. Plug your shit.
Yeah, yeah. Now you can find me mainly on Instagram. It's Angie B. Bergamo, and that's two B's. So that's like where I'll post most of my like dance content. I haven't posted as much just because I haven't been performing as much during the pandemic, but the link to like my reel is on my Instagram, and there are classes and like other videos of projects I've done. I'm also in a couple companies, so support those companies. They are Kadash Contemporary Dance Movement and Messengers Dance Company. And yeah, that's probably the best way to kind of reach out, see what's going on.
Heck yeah. Cool. And then we have a nice little tradition on this podcast where we close out with a particular question. Okay. Angela, what feels like home to you?
What feels like home? Being on stage. Like, I hope that's not a generic answer, but
that's perfect.
Being on stage feels like home. I feel like my truest, most authentic, most comfortable self when I'm doing what I love. Spent the last tear trying to mend the way you left me lying wide-eyed in my bed.
Now every time I like feel a need to up and move, I'm like, it's just movement, like Angela says.
It's just movement, just go. Or if you ever want to like learn the dance from a certain video, you know, like you see, I don't know, music videos these days aren't as dance heavy, but you know, you'd like learn the like try and learn the Michael Jackson videos. It's like right. You can do it. Something precious in its design. The way the door shut, but I still can't see through fine.
Angela.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here with us. You are a lovely human, and I am so glad we were able to hang out for this little evening.
Yes. It's dark. Yeah, it's definitely evening. We should we should do it more often. I really I miss you guys, but thank you for having me on.
Of course. I always love talking about art.
Yes.